WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, in for Terry Gross. Muhammad Yunus has made a business out of an unthinkable banking proposition to give loans to the poorest of the poor, people who have no collateral, no assets, and no proven method of making a living. Out of this idea has grown the Grameen Bank of Bangladesh. Since the bank was founded in 1983, it's distributed more than $2 billion to 2.5 million people, with only 1% of those borrowers defaulting on their loans. 94% of the bank's clientele are women in rural villages, who are also shareholders. The average first-time loan is less than a few hundred dollars. It goes to pay for a cow or a sewing machine that can help the women start their own businesses. International aid organizations, such as the World Bank, have at times criticized the program as providing an insignificant contribution to economic development. But Yunus counters that the kinds of projects the World Bank and other development agencies fund, such as infrastructure building and skills training, do nothing to help the most desperately impoverished. Others agree. Now there are microcredit programs in 43 countries, including in Europe and the United States. Muhammad Yunus has written about his efforts to pioneer microlending in his new book, Banker to the Poor. I asked him how he went from teaching economics to lending money to the poor.
Bangladesh became an independent country in 1971. I was teaching in the U.S. at that time, and I participated in the campaign for creating an independent Bangladesh. After the year is over, in 1971, Bangladesh became an independent country. And we were very, very excited that now we have a country that we can build in our own way. So I went back to Bangladesh to participate in the rebuilding of the economy, which was totally devastated during the Liberation War. And I joined Chittagong University to teach. And instead of the country moving economically upwards, it was sliding down very quickly downwards. And we ended up with a famine in 1974. And I find myself in a very strange situation, teaching elegant and magnificent theories of economics that I learned from American University. And seeing myself in the midst of terrible poverty situation, up to a situation of hunger and famine. So I felt very empty about what I was doing. And I thought the things that I was teaching didn't mean anything to anybody. These are almost like make-believe stories which do not exist, the fairy tales about an economy which has no resemblance with the economy that is around me. So I thought if I want to be honest to myself, I should be able to understand what life of these poor people is all about. So I wanted to learn about it, and as I wanted to make myself useful as a human being to another human being in that difficult situation. So I would go around in the village next door to the university campus just to do that.
How did you go about talking to people in the local village of Jobra,
yes,
about their situation?
It was very easy. I speak the local dialect, and people didn't recognize me as a university teacher as such, just another person. I would go around and try to seek out the extremely poor person and sit down with him, with her, talking about the day's problems and so on, see if there's anything I can do to address any one of these things. And I saw how people suffered for a very small amount of money, as small as $1 or less than a dollar. And the woman who really triggered this all, she was making bamboo stool, and I was talking to her because of the extreme poverty I see and the beautiful product she was making. I couldn't reconcile how these both things can go together. And she explained to me she makes only 2 pennies a day. And I couldn't believe that anybody could work with such a beautiful skill just to make 2 pennies a day. And she explained to me that she didn't have the money to buy the bamboo, which goes into that bamboo product. And she had to borrow from the trader to buy that bamboo. And the trader imposes a condition on her that she has to sell the product to the trader at the price that he decides. So that turned her into a bonded labor, a slave labor. And the cost of bamboo, I thought, must be very high. Otherwise, why should she should not be able to buy it? So she told me that it cost 25 cents. And it was a big shock for me to see, just because somebody could not come up with 25 cents to start a business that she knows very well, and she has to go to someone who turns her into a bonded labor. And then I went around to see if there are other people like her, and I came up with a list of 42 people, similar condition. And the total money they needed was $27. So that was the time I couldn't take it anymore. I just put my hands into pocket and came up with the money myself, giving them as a loan, telling them that they can pay me back whenever they're ready to, and they can sell their product wherever they get good price. And that was the beginning of it.
Now, you made a proposal to the local branch of a government bank that they continue this process, that they continue to lend money to the poorest of the poor in this local village. What response did you get?
The manager fell from the sky when I said that because he couldn't believe that anybody would, in the right mind, think of lending money to the poor people. And he kept on explaining that the bank cannot lend money to the poor people because they are not creditworthy. And I asked, why do you think they are not creditworthy? Have you tried it out? He said, no, I didn't try it out. But everybody knows that they are not creditworthy. They are not going to pay you back. And they don't have the collateral. So they can't even come anywhere near the bank. So I said, I would like to try it out. Can you give me the money so that I can give the money to these people in the village? He refused. He said, the bank lost, do not allow him to do that. But he suggested that I should see the senior officials in the banking hierarchy and see if they would come up with any idea how to go about it. And I took his advice and went around to see the higher officials, and everybody told me the same thing. It cannot be done. Poor are not creditworthy. Bank cannot lend money to the poor people. So ultimately, after a few days of knocking at people's doors, I decided to offer myself as a guarantor. I said, why don't I become a guarantor and you give the money? And that took about 6 months of negotiation with the bank, finally to accept me as a guarantor. And gave me the money for the people in the village.
Did you ever get called on your
No, on no. They debated about what should be the maximum limit that I can borrow with my signature. They put a cap to my ability to draw money with my signature. And then it was $300. And I said, okay, let me begin, see whether it works or not. And I began. I gave the money to the people, and people paid back. And I was very excited that the bank manager turned out to be wrong, and I was right. When I mentioned this to the bank manager, he said, no, this is just the beginning, and you are doing it only in one village. That's why it worked. If you do it in two villages, it don't work. And I went ahead. I said, let me try it in two villages. So I did, and again, it came out just the right thing. It's the people, everybody paid back. Then the bank manager said, well, one village and the two villages are about the same thing. What you should do, at least do it in over five villages. So I did it over five villages. But the bank manager didn't change his mind. He kept on increasing the number of the villages each time I come out successfully. So I went ahead, 20 villages, 50 villages, 100 villages, still without any impact on his view. So that's when I decided that maybe I should create a bank for myself, lending money to the poor people. So I went to the government to seek permission and get a license to set up a bank. Government didn't feel very excited about it. They thought this is not a very good idea to have a bank exclusively for the poor people. It took me 2 years to convince the government. Finally, in 1983, we got the permission to set up a bank. And we created Grameen Bank and kept on expanding our work.
My guest is Mohammed Yunus. He's the founder and managing director of the Grameen Bank in Bangladesh. He pioneered the practice of microlending, offering very small loans to the very poor to help them set up their own businesses. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Mohammed Yunus. He's the founder and managing director of the Grameen Bank in Bangladesh. His new memoir about pioneering the process of micro-lending to the poor is called Banker to the Poor. Once you got Grameen Bank off the ground, one of the first key requirements that you made of your borrowers is that each applicant join a support group of like-minded people seeking loans. What was the purpose of that requirement? And that's really become one of the key philosophies of your form of micro-lending.
Even before we became a bank, this was there. We began with certain ideas how to make sure people do pay back. And one of the things we came out is to ask them to form a group of five people. And that became an essential feature of Grameen Bank. And we also introduced weekly repayments. And when we became a bank, we simply followed the same thing that we were doing anyway in the villages where we worked. It helps because people get more courage to get involved in business, particularly women, because we were encouraging women to participate in our work. And they feel very scared to do anything by themselves. So having four other friends with you adds to your initiative and your courage to enter into a territory which you've never been before. And also weekly repayment helps in a way. You are paying only small amount each time, so you don't feel a lot of burden on you. It's not a huge amount of money. So it's a small amount of money, and you can... it's almost like a bite size that you pay back.
How much do people usually borrow?
In the beginning, when we were starting out, loan size was as small as $10, $15. But gradually, the initial loan size increased as inflation made everything expensive. So I would say even today, if someone for the first time joining Grameen Bank and asking for a loan, it would be about $35.
How long does it usually take for someone to achieve a more financially secure position? How many, I guess you call it loan cycles?
Loan cycles, yes. Usually, the studies that have been done shows that it could be as small as 5 cycles, or it could be as large as 15 cycles. So anybody who has been in Grameen going through the 5 cycles of loan could get out of the poverty situation, achieve some economic sustainability of our own. This is the earliest entry into a self-sustaining position. But this may be delayed for other reasons, not having marketing facilities or having sick people in the family or not having male persons in the family who could take the merchandise or whatever you're producing in the marketplace, because women still can't go to the marketplace. It's always dependent on male members of the family who could carry things in the marketplace and sell it for you. So all those things delay the progress. So it could take as long as 15 years. So now we are trying to see if we can reduce this gap from 5 to 15 years gap that we see. Can we make sure that someone gets over the poverty line in, say, 8 years? If you have been with Grameen and gone through 8 cycles of loan, very high probability that you will be moving out of poverty. And how do we ensure that? These are the issues now we are handling.
You set a goal also early on of ensuring that half your borrowers are women. Why was that such an urgent priority for you?
Well, when I began, I was very critical of the banking system. I'm still critical of the banking system. At that time, I was making 2 points against the banking system repeatedly. I was saying that the banking system is designed to keep the poor people out. That's why they invented this requirement called collateral. Otherwise, it doesn't serve any other purpose. And then I said it's not only biased against poor people, banking system is also biased against women. If you look at all the banks in Bangladesh, I said if you look at the gender composition of the borrowers, not even 1% of the borrowers would be women. So there must be something wrong in their rules and their attitude, which keeps the women away. So when I began, I wanted to make sure I reach out to the poor people and half the borrowers are women. So this is as a kind of reaction to what I saw banks were doing, and I thought that was unfair. So this was my fairness principle, that I wanted to make sure half the borrowers are women. But when I went to the women to invite them in to Grameen Bank, to borrow money from Grameen Bank, They refused to join Grameen Bank. They said, no, don't give the money to me because I don't know anything about money. I don't know anything about investing money to any business. Why don't you give it to my husband? He's the one who handles money. So it was quite a bit of work for us to persuade women to change her mind and join Grameen Bank, take the money. Many of these women pleaded that she never handled money before. She never touched money in her life. So she is very scared. She doesn't want to get involved with something which will create trouble for the family. She thought touching money will create problem for her, for the family.
How did you get these women to overcome some of their objections or their disinclination to get involved with the bank? And I'm thinking most of these women in a Muslim country are in purdah, are not willing to talk to or shouldn't talk to strange men without getting in all sorts of trouble, I would imagine.
Well, that was another story. I was skipping that part. For me to talk to women, being a man, was very, very difficult. In the beginning, I would take my girl students with me in the village, and I'll sit under a tree or stand under a tree outside, and one of my girl students will go in and talk to the women, and she will come back with their questions, their remarks, and I'll clarify to my student what I have to say, and she will go inside. So it was a kind of indirect contact because Parda would not allow me to be in direct contact. So it took a lot of time before I could really sit face to face and talk to them. It happened only after we got started with the money. People got so involved, the women got so involved with the money discussion, they forgot about Parda and everything else, and there were serious questions, serious proposals to me, and I was explaining to them, they want to listen to me. So gradually, that distance was overcome. But even after overcoming the distance, it's not easy for them to join Grameen Bank Group. The way we overcome this is by repeated contacts, repeated explanation. After all, it's what they say they don't want money. It's not their real answer. It's their fear, which has been accumulating on them for years and years. So it's not, you cannot peel it off in one go. So it takes a lot of time, a lot of examples, a lot of demonstrations before she gets interested in the subject. And usually it happens when one of the desperate women will finally say, well, what can go wrong? Everything is wrong in my life. I have nothing to lose. Let me do it. Maybe I'll be able to make it. So she wants to get started with a group, and she will try out her friends and finally succeed in finding four friends to form a group. And when you see some of them took the loan from the bank and they're making money, then the news spreads like wildfire. Everybody said, hey, you can do this. Look what she is doing. Everybody comes to talk to her. And she becomes the real messenger of Grameen Bank. And the women will talk for hours with her, how she did it, how is there something that they cannot do? She said, no, it's a very simple thing. If you take money, I'm raising chicken, you can raise chicken, or I'm doing the paddy husking, and I make this kind of money, and bank will give you this, and I can pay them, I'm paying this like this. So she becomes the one who is explaining to people in great details and very in a very convincing way, because it is her life. It's not an official coming and telling you.
My guest is Muhammad Yunus. He's the founder and managing director of the Grameen Bank of Bangladesh, which pioneered the concept of extending credit to the very poor. We'll continue our conversation after the break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Muhammad Yunus, the founder of the Grameen Bank of Bangladesh. You also departed from a tradition at Grameen Bank by handing out loans without providing any skills training first. The international community is pretty critical of this. Why give the credit first?
My argument is that people do have skills. The donors and the traditional development economists always arguing that people are poor because they don't have a skill. So before you can do anything, they must be trained, they must be given a skill, so they are ready to do something else. My argument is all people have skills, even the most the poor person, absolutely. Someone who cannot earn a penny for himself or herself have a skill. And the way I say it, I said the fact that the person is alive is an indication, is a proof that he or she has a very important skill, and that is the survival skill. If we can only support their survival skill, we can move on from there. And I've been arguing that all people, including the very poorest, have a lot more skill than they can use. They cannot use it because the other pieces do not fit into it. Institutional support like financing and so on do not come forward to it. So they cannot move forward in using their excess capacity that they have. So credit helps because credit immediately creates that facility to use their excess capacity or excess skill that they have. So instead of giving them training, you just make create that enabling environment for them so that they can move on with what they have. And if they need, if they exhaust their skill, they'll be looking for a skill and which would be around in their own neighborhood to adopt and move on and improve their condition. Also, I'm against skill training right away because that donors make it an easy way out for themselves. They spend a lot of money on training, give it an impression that they are really doing something, actually doing nothing. So I would say, and spend a lot of money on the training. And it's actually the money goes to the, basically to the trainers and the bureaucracy and everything. And the real net worth of the training, people using the training to make money, is would be very, very small contribution in their own life. So I said, why spend money in that way rather than help them to seek out their own skill and give them the money to find that skill wherever they want to?
You've helped set up Grameen-type micro-lending initiatives in developed countries in Europe and in the U.S. How much of an obstacle is social welfare and attitudes among the poor, as well as the society at large that are born of the social welfare state, to your efforts?
It's a big, big barrier in developed countries where people, poor people are given charities in the name of public support. This takes away initiative from them, number one. Even people who would like to take credit, move out of the welfare regime, they find it extremely difficult because the welfare laws are so stringent. Once you are in, you cannot get out, even if you want to. So that is something one has to look very carefully because welfare laws actually are built to keep people in welfare. These were not designed to help people get out of welfare. So we have to look at the very design of it. It has a big door in getting in, but no opening to get out.
Grameen has inspired a number of micro-lending groups. One was a Good Faith Fund in Arkansas under then-Governor Bill Clinton. There are other groups in the U.S. and in Canada. There's really some disagreement about the success, mostly because there's a really high default rate of perhaps 40% compared to 1% in Bangladesh and other developing countries. The cost of administering loans is much higher, and people have much more trouble breaking in to the marketplace as entrepreneurs in a developed country compared to countries in the third world. Do you still believe that microlending is a viable approach to alleviating poverty in countries like the U.S.?
Oh, very much. If you agree that people need money to catch money, country like United States, banking system do not make this money available to the poor people. If Grameen or microcredit program similar to it can provide money to them, they will find a way to catch more money. So if you agree on that principle, the rest is a question of how to design that program so that we make sure we avoid the pitfalls, we don't make mistakes. When somebody do not pay back the loan, I always explain to my colleagues in Grameen Bank that it is not the fault of the person. It is the fault of the program. It is the fault of the institution. They didn't know how to design that program. So let's not concentrate on the default rate issue. Default rate is a problem with the design, not of the people. And then I would say about the cost of it. Yes, cost is very high because we are in a situation where the salary level is high, where the volume of loan is very small. But at the same time, you should compare it with the welfare cost. If you leave that person in welfare, how much does it cost? Would you rather leave that person under welfare situation or have an expensive credit operation so that that person can come out of the welfare situation and become a taxpayer himself and herself and contribute to the tax revenue rather than become a burden on the tax revenue?
Muhammad Yunus, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Thank you very much, too.
Muhammad Yunus is the founder and managing director of the Grameen Bank. His new book is Banker to the Poor.